guys. So, you knew that I wasn't gonna let the Halloween season pass without doing a little something extra. If you're a longtime viewer of the show, like one of our regulars, you know that initially my plan, which turned out to be way too much for me to handle, was I was gonna do a 31 Days of Horror. So I was gonna do like 31 extra reviews, like one for every day of October. Well, as most of you know, we ended up having to move sort of unexpectedly or more quickly than we had anticipated. So I didn't really have time to do that, but I still wanted to do something special for Halloween. So I just decided to do just a week of extra reviews, just one, you know, review every day leading up to Halloween, so there will at least be something to commemorate the best holiday of the year. And because I'm a dork, I called it Eek Week, because of course I did. So that's what we're going to do this week. We're doing 7 extra movie reviews of movies that I had been wanting to get around to for like a really long time and just hadn't got to it. And I also kind of wanted to, they're not all specifically Halloween based, but I did definitely want to, I don't know, I did definitely want to concentrate on films that gave me that kind of Halloween-y sort of vibe. Some of them are very Halloween, you know, based, but I kind of liked, you know, like a witchy, old school ghost story type of thing. And I wanted that kind of vibe, like with all the movies that I was going to do. So I'm not going to spoil which ones are going to turn up, but you know, maybe you'll see. If you're on Patreon, maybe you'll see. I might put the list up there so you can see. So I got my little witchy poo, my little friend here, and she's going to talk about it. I have little different friends depending on what movie I'm talking about. So today we are talking about Black Sunday, which is kind of a witch movie. You know, we'll get into that in a little bit. But so I decided to put one of my little witch buddies here to just kind of sit in place over there and listen to me talking about this movie. So, Black Sunday, this came out in 1960. And can I just say, 1960 was a hell of a year for modern horror as far as influential films coming out. Obviously, in the United States, 1960, we saw the release of Psycho. And in the UK, we had the release of Peeping Tom. So there's definitely something in the culture at large, Western culture at large, that horror movies were kind of coming out the gate being more violent, you know what I mean? So even though Black Sunday is almost kind of like a throwback to the more gothic Universal films of the 30s and 40s, it did have like a much, much more violent, you know, like a lot more gore and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, Psycho and Peeping Tom were kind of more like getting away from the gothic tradition and just going in a more like straight up serial killer violent sort of direction. And both of those things almost kind of like coalesced into one sort of thing. Like I said, all three of those films coming out the same year and actually almost around the same time, because if I'm not mistaken, they all came out within about a month of each other, if I'm remembering correctly. I wasn't alive back then, but, you know, I did read about it. So they all came out, like, right around the same time, and were all fairly controversial, depending on the country that they were released in. So what ends up happening with Black Sunday, which is actually not the name that it was originally released under, because it actually didn't get released in the U.S. until 1961, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But it was initially released in Italy as La Maschera del Demonio, or The Mask of the Demon, you know, later known as The Mask of Satan. And it was basically Mario Bava, the legendary Italian film director, who probably, I mean, easily more than anyone else, very, very influential in Italian cinema, and particularly influential in the giallo genre, the horror genre, big influence on Dario Argento, so we'll get into that a little bit too. But he had been a cinematographer prior to this. And if you've seen any of his films, that will become readily apparent, because his films are actually really, really beautiful looking. So he knows how to frame a shot and how to make everything look fantastic. He had actually worked on some sword and sandal films from back coming out of Italy, among them Hercules and Hercules Unchained, both of which I think they both turned up on Mystery Science Theater, now that I'm thinking about it. Not bad movies by any stretch of the imagination, but you know. So there's that whole thing. So because he had worked on, I think he worked on Cal Tiki, the Immortal Monster as well, which, you know, that didn't do all that well, but the Hercules movies, big hit. And they were also like a big hit in the United States too, like when they got imported over here. So Mario Bava was given, they're like, basically, okay, well, you know, now you can direct your own movie, so let's see what you come out with. Now, he decided, between him and the producers and whoever, they decided they were going to do a horror film because Hammer had recently released Dracula in 1958, which was directed by Terence Fisher, and it was, like, really, really successful, so they figured, okay, well, horror is going to be the way to go. Now, what Mario Bava initially wanted to do was he had written a screen treatment, I believe the first draft was only, like, 4 pages, where he wanted to make a movie based on the Russian short story by Nikolai Gogol called V-V-Voy. I don't really speak Russian, so I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce it. Like, I listened to, like, the pronunciation thing, but I was, like, trying to do it, and I'm just like, I can't get it exactly right. But, yeah. So, it's basically a story about, like, a bunch of students, and they encounter this witch who, in, like, it's kind of like a gnome type of thing. So he wrote a story, and he said that he really, really liked that story, and he had read it to his kids, like, when they were growing up and everything. So he really wanted to make a film adaptation of that. So he wrote, like, a screen treatment, took it to the producers, and they're like, eh, we didn't really like that. So they had all these other screenwriters come in and sort of rewrite it. So even though I believe the credits do say that it's based on that short story, it really doesn't retain all that much of the story. Basically, yeah, there's a witch in it, and yeah, there's, like, an old crumbling crypt in it, and there's the whole thing where the witch appears, like, as a young, beautiful woman, but that's pretty much the extent of the similarity. I will say that there was actually a pretty faithful adaptation of it made in the Soviet Union in 1967, which, if you want to see it, I think it's on Shudder, actually. I haven't watched it yet, but it's kind of like a classic. I think it's in their essential horror section, because it's kind of like a really influential film from then. But so there have been, like, several movie adaptations of this short story. And even though Black Sunday is listed as it, it's not, it really hardly doesn't have anything to do with it. They did kind of use a lot of the names, and it's set in the same area. Like, it's set in Moldavia. So it has, like, a Russian flavor to it, or an Eastern European type of flavor to it. But other than it being kind of about a witch, it's not really all that similar. So the movie comes out in Italy, and it does okay, but not great. Now, American International Pictures, who had been having, as I mentioned, a lot of success with Italian import films, like the Sword and Sandal films and stuff, were basically like, oh, that sounds pretty good. We'll release it over here. And they decided, I think there's a version of it that's called The Mask of Satan, but for whatever reason, they decided they were going to call it Black Sunday. I don't know if it was to tie in with Black Sabbath, the anthology film that had Boris Karloff in it, although I think that came out later, but I don't know. So they decided to retitle it Black Sunday. They actually redubbed it, and they added a new score because they thought the original score was quote-unquote too Italian, which I'm not entirely sure what that means, but okay. And so, yeah, and also they cut out 4 minutes of gore, because this, for 1960, this is a pretty gory movie. And, like, the special effects are pretty, I mean, obviously by today's standards, you know, it's nothing. But, I mean, compared to, like, the freak out people had about Psycho, which was violent, but a lot of the violence was implied. And same with Peeping Tom, which I would argue is a little bit more violent, but that was also, like, implied. This one, not implied. It's, like, it's pretty gruesome, and it just goes for it and shows everything that it's gonna show, because, you know, Italy, that's kind of their thing. So they weren't implying shit. They were just kind of like, there it is. So for 1960, this was a very, very violent, gory film. So like I said, when they released it in the United States, they cut 4 minutes out of it. So there are a few versions of this floating around. I believe that the most common version nowadays, which is just called Black Sunday, even though the title card when you watch the film says The Mask of Satan on it, has it has an English dub, and I'm not really sure which score it has, but I'm pretty sure that all of the stuff has been restored at this point, because I think it's back to, like, 87 minutes. So if you're watching it, like, because it's on Shudder, it's on, like, a bunch of other streaming services, if you're watching it out there, I'm 99% sure that this is you know, the original version. It's not like the cut up AIP version. So when they released it in the United States, it was about, you know, I don't even know if it was an entire year later, but it came out a little while afterward. And it was usually kind of, they showed it like on double features. They usually showed it with like Little Shop of Horrors, the Roger Corman film. And it was actually really, really successful. Actually, in the U.S. and in other parts of, you know, in like France and stuff like that, it was actually a lot more successful than it was in Italy, and it got like a better critical response. It seemed like in Italy, critics didn't really like it all that much. And like I said, it did okay, but it didn't do all that great, like money-wise. But France and the United States were kind of like, the critics, you know, reviews were mixed, but they were actually a lot better. And I think a lot of that comes from, I mean, this is, if you're into, like, gothic horror films, especially if you like the classics, like, the Universal Monster movies and stuff like that, this is a beautiful, beautiful movie. It's just, like, every single frame of it just looks like a gothic wet dream. It's just, it's fantastic. It just, the sets are beautiful, the costumes are beautiful, just the framing is beautiful, just the way it's done at the camera movements, it has these kind of like fluid camera movements, some of which were actually very influential on some later horror films, which I'll probably bring up in a bit. But it's just, I mean, obviously you can see like a lot of the influence of this. And you can tell, yes, it's a very gothic film. But like I said, I guess this was something that was going on at the time because Hammer was kind of doing this too, where they were taking like gothic movies and then like bumping up the boobs and the gore. And that's kind of what this one is doing too. There's not any nudity in this one other than there's a nude painting of Barbara Steele's character at one point, but I don't think she actually gets naked in it. There's like cleavage, a lot of heaving booby cleavage and stuff, but I don't think there's any nudity. But as far as gore goes, this was like pretty off the charts for 1960, and you can definitely tell that this was a big, big influence on Italian filmmaking and American filmmaking in general too. And I was gonna say too that Tim Burton actually, this was one of his favorite films from childhood and made like a huge impression on him. And he also did an homage to it in his movie Sleepy Hollow. And I've also seen like a couple of reviewers say that maybe Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, which came out in the early 90s, that there's one shot in that, like the one shot where Dracula's shadow is coming through, like knocking shit over and everything like that. That could be an homage to a scene in Black Sunday, because there is a scene like that, like very similar to that in Black Sunday as well. So what we have going on in this movie, Barbara Steele, now she had been in movies prior to this, but she was still kind of, you know, this was kind of like early in her career. The story goes, I guess she had been working in Hollywood, but there was a strike. And so a lot of American actors went over to Italy, like to get some work. The story goes that Mario Bava just saw a picture of her, either in Life magazine or had seen her headshot or something like that, and was like, yeah, I want her for my movie because her face looks fucking great. So kind of got her over there. Now, again, legend goes that she was very, very difficult to work with. She kind of apologized for that later, saying, you know, I was really young, I was really inexperienced, I'd never worked in Italy before, I didn't really speak Italian, there was a lot of misunderstandings. I also heard that she didn't, like, she only got the script pages for what was going on that day of shooting, so she didn't really have much of an idea of the overarching story, which I think there's a couple times in the movie where you can kind of see that, but it's like, I'm not really sure. It's hard to say if it was, like, deliberate or whatever, but, I mean, she was for real, and I love Barbara Steele. Like, this movie made her, even though the movie didn't do all that well in Italy, it made her like an instant movie star in Italy. And then obviously she went on to be in like a shit ton of other horror films and other films as well. But yeah, she went on to work with David Cronenberg and, you know, and everything. So so she actually, you know, she said she was difficult on the set. And like I said, she kind of apologized for it. And some of the other people working on like on the crew and everything were like, yeah, she was like really weird and like neurotic. And she had kind of like paranoid fantasies about like other people working on the film that they were like out to get her or something like that. But yeah, so it was a big thing, but the movie came out good. So, you know, so it's fine. The opening scene of this movie, I would argue, is easily, if not the best, one of the best opening scenes in classic horror. Because, and honestly, in the first, the opening scene is so good that it's almost like the rest of the movie can't quite live up to it just because it just opens with such a bang. Basically, you have Barbara Steele playing this witch named Asa, and she's kind of tied to a stake or whatever, and her brother is there talking about her and her her kind of sidekick, lover, you know, a partner in crime, whatever. And they're going to execute both of them, and they're going to burn them at the stake and whatever. And, you know, and of course she being a witch, basically is like, yeah, curse all you motherfuckers. And, you know, I'm going to curse your entire family line, like for hundreds of years and everything like that. And then, so the brother comes out and they take this mask. It's essentially like like the face of an Iron Maiden, but it's just the mask part. And it kind of looks like the devil on the outside, like it's all kind of fucked up. But all the inside is like all spikes. So there's this great shot where they show kind of like the outside of the mask. And then it kind of like, then he films through the eyes and you can see her like kind of freaking out like, oh shit. And then they kind of like turn it around and there's like this great shadow like on all the spikes and everything. And then they legit put the mask onto her face, and this dude, like an executioner's hood, has this massive like wooden mallet, and he goes whack, and he just like fucking nails the shit right to her face, and blood comes out the fucking top, and blood comes out the eye holes. It's fucking, I mean, it's black and white, but it's fucking great. And so you can see why 1960 something like this would have been extremely shocking, because most other movies, like I said, would have cut away or maybe just suggested that with a sound effect or whatever, but this one absolutely did not. It actually just shows the mask just going whack, like, onto the face and the blood shooting out and everything like that. It's fucking great. So, like I said, it's just a great fucking opening sequence, like, with this witch or whatever. So then we jump ahead 200 years. I think it's 200 years. So we have these two, like a doctor and his like younger doctor companion, right? You got Dr. Kruvayan, who's the older guy, and his assistant, who's Dr. Gorobek, or Andre as he's called. They're going through Moldavia in their carriage, and they're on their way to this, medical conference, I guess they're going to. So obviously, this being a horror movie, the wheel falls off their carriage. There's kind of creepy shit going on in the woods. Like, their carriage driver is like, man, I don't want to go this way. It's a shortcut. And it's like the trees are coming to get me and all this other kind of stuff. So there's all this foreshadowing. And so the carriage kind of breaks down. So the driver has to fix it. Now, while the driver is going to fix it, the two doctors decide, hey, well, they hear this weird noise. So they kind of go off into the woods to find out what it is, because that's just something that you do in horror movies, which you should never do in real life. I hear a weird noise like out in the middle of the dark woods at night, I'd be like, yeah, I'm just gonna stay right here and I'm not even curious about what that is, because I'm sure it's nothing good. But so they decide to go investigate this noise, and it turns out that the noise is actually this old pipe organ, and there's like all this wind blowing through the pipe organ. They're like, oh, well, that explains that. But then they notice like this really run down crypt, and they're like, oh, kick ass, you know what I mean? Which is, again, that's probably what I would say. And that probably would have been the end of it, but then they see like the door of the crypt, like it kind of like opens and closes by itself, and they're like, huh, maybe somebody's in there, or like maybe somebody lives in there. So they decide to go in and check it out, because like I said, it's a horror movie. So they go in there, and it's like a crypt, like I said, there's like tombs and shit like that. And they find the one tomb which belonged to Asa, obviously the witch. And it's great because it's like there's the coffin, and the coffin has like a window in the top, so you can see the mask, like her face. They left it on there, and then the window is there, and then there's like a cross that's kind of like, you know, up on the coffin. And the older doctor explains, he's like, oh yeah, this is the shit they used to do back then, the superstition. When they executed a witch, they figured they'd keep her in there, so she'd have to like look at the cross all the time, so she couldn't get out. Now, I will say too that even though Asa she's called a witch, but she's also kind of like a vampire in the sense that she kind of comes back from the dead and she like drinks blood, like blood makes her stronger, and she does kind of like vampire-y shit. So she's kind of a witch and she's kind of a vampire, and then she's also kind of a Satanist. So it's kind of like confusing, but whatever. They were just kind of like, whatever. Like I said, the original story, it was a witch with a gnome sidekick that had an iron face, which I guess is where they got the idea for, like, the Mask of Satan from. But, you know, like I said, so it's very witchy, but she also has, like, vampire aspects to her as well. So there's that whole thing going on. Just roll with it. It's Italy. They're not super worried about it. Now, the funny thing about this is, so, like, the older doctor is just kind of like, yeah, well, she can't get out of the coffin. Or that was what they believed, like, obviously, because he's a doctor and he's like, I don't believe in these silly superstitions. But he's like, they believed that when they put her in the ground, like, if they didn't put that cross there for her to look at, then she'd, like, pop back out and fuck shit up. So they were like, that's what they do. Now, in a very hilarious and very contrived scene, the younger doctor is like, yeah, I'm gonna go check on that carriage and see when we can get the fuck out of here. The doctor's like, well, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, fart around in here for a little while. And then he gets attacked by this massive bat, right? So the bat's like flying around and he has his cane and he's like beating the shit out of this bat. And of course, while he's beating the shit out of the bat, he not only breaks open the window in the coffin, but he also breaks the cross. And I'm just kind of like, really? But then, I mean, I don't know, because later on, there's like some dialogue in the film that maybe leads one to believe that that was done like on purpose, like supernaturally, like maybe she was, you know, engineering it from like inside the grave, like, hey, let me out. Like, there's somebody in here so I can manipulate this bat to go fly in the dude's face and maybe it'll like help me get out. So maybe it wasn't like as, because it just seems really comical like when you're watching it, because I'm just like, oh really? Like, he breaks the window and then he's like, oh shit, then he's like flailing around and he breaks the cross and I'm just like, oh, okay, there you get a twofer. And then because he's broken everything open, he figures, well, why the hell not? I'm also gonna pull the mask off of her face. You might as well, now that you've already, like, taken away every other protection. So she takes, he takes the mask off her face, and the face looks actually really good. It's wax, and the eyeballs are, you know, there's no eyes. It's kind of like a skull, but there's, like, skin there, too. And there's, like, maggots and shit all over. It looks fantastic. So he's like, oh, you know, she's remarkably well-preserved, except for the eyeballs and all this other stuff. And then, again, like a dumbass, he cuts himself, because here's, like, the fourth thing. He cuts himself on the glass from the broken glass from the window, and the blood like drips on her. So of course you know that she's gonna like come back from the dead, right? Now I will say my favorite effect, there's some great effects in this, by the way. My favorite effect in this, and it still gets me like every time I see it, even though this was a 1960, and this effect, and it's so simply done, but it looks really, really great. So like when he bleeds on her and she starts to sort of like regenerate, they had this mask that looked like basically just like her, but like I said, just with eye sockets. And they have like the eyes like coming back into the sockets and sort of glowing. And they did that with poached eggs. Like they had this thing like underneath and they had like these poached eggs like coming up through this like wax, you know, statue of her that they had made. And it looks great. It looks like really like goopy. And they actually really do look like creepy fucking eyeballs like coming up through it. And almost, I guess like the way they lit it, it almost looks like when the eyes kind of come in, they're sort of milky. And then they kind of like glow in the middle. Like I said, it's probably like the lighting that they did that. And it just looks so fucking great. I love that effect so much. And I just love that they did that with fucking poached eggs. That fucking cracks me up. So yeah, so obviously this witch Asa is gonna come back to life. Now there's also another woman, Katya, who is also played by Barbara Steele, and she is an ancestor of the witch. So the family, it's like her dad and her brother, whose name is Constantine, I think, and her, and they are ancestors of Asa. So they have kind of like a portrait of her. I don't think the portrait is of her. I think the portrait was of like another female, because I guess every female descendant looks like Barbara Steele. And maybe, because I think like they mentioned like 100 years before that the witch had come back 100 years before and tried to possess the other woman. I think her name was Masha. So I guess she comes back every 100 years to like fuck with shit. But yeah, so it's implied that it happened before, but I guess since the budget on this wasn't huge, they couldn't really show that in flashbacks. So they just kind of like, you know, they exposit about how it happened. So basically what we have is this whole entire time, the younger doctor who sees Katya like standing at the crypt and she's like super creepy. And so for a second, remember when I said earlier that Barbara Steele Or at least the story that I heard was that she didn't get the whole script, or she didn't know what was going on in the whole script, and she only got stuff that was going on in the day. This one scene where Andre, the younger doctor, first sees her, like, standing by the crypt, and she's got a dog, and then she's got, like, this black cape, and she looks all gothic and amazing, you know, with her big, huge, she has those great eyes. I think that was kind of, like, what a lot of people, like, responded to. She was a beautiful, beautiful woman. So the first time that he sees her, like, standing outside, I thought, because you had seen, I mean, the doctors didn't see it, because they'd already, like, fucked off from the crypt, but you, the audience, had seen Asa, the witch, like, kind of regenerating, like, in the tomb, right? And then, like, only the next scene, you see Katya standing outside of the tomb. So you're almost kind of led to, so I thought that was Asa for a second, and she was acting sort of weird, like, when the doctors are first, like, talking to her. So for a second, I thought that, because I didn't realize that they're, you know, I've seen this a couple times, but I had forgotten the story that, you know, that's, it's an ancestor and, like, the witch is, like, trying to, like, possess her, or, like, suck out her life force or whatever. So I thought, oh, well, she's back already and she's just, like, being all creepy and everything. But that's actually just Katya. So nobody knows, like, Asa hasn't, like, even woke up yet. So she's just acting like that just to be weird. But the young Dr. Andre, he is immediately in love with her. I mean, you know, it's Barbara Steele, so I understand. But so basically he's, like, hanging his head out the thing of the carriage, like, because they're going to, like, an inn, because they're on, like I said, they're on their way to a conference and they have to, you know, go to this inn before they can go the next day. And he's just, like, hanging his head out the door of the carriage, like, looking back at her like he's, like, a dog or something. It's, like, super funny. So basically, as the story goes on, like I said, there's not really any, like, super surprises or anything like that, because it's a pretty common story. You have the witch Asa, who is trying to like reanimate her buddy, like her partner in crime that also got executed with her like 200 years ago, whose name was Javutich, whatever his name was. He kind of comes back sort of zombie like he crawls out of the grave or whatever, but he can do like poltergeisty shit, like, because he comes into the castle, like, where Katya and her family live, and you can't see him, like, he's invisible, but he's knocks shit over. Like, he knocks over, like, candlesticks and, like, suits of armor and stuff like that. So, yeah, so he does poltergeisty shit. So the two of them are basically kind of, like, joining forces now that they're back from the dead, and they're trying to drain all the life force. So they do end up killing Katya's dad, draining the life force. And basically what Asa wants to do is take over Katya's body, because, you know, it's easier because they just look exactly alike because they're both Barbara Steele. So she's just like, I'm going to take over this and just do my evil on the world or whatever, because, she's, like I said, she's a witch. Now, interestingly, like I said, not only does she drink blood, kind of. I mean, she kind of like, when she kills the one guy, because she kills the older doctor, and I think, or she like possesses or takes him over, she kind of like kisses him, and it's almost kind of like, so I don't know if she's like actually sucking blood out, or if she's like, or if she's like a psychic vampire of some kind, like she's kind of sucking out life force or whatever, but blood did animate her. Also very vampiric, she can be repelled, as can her buddy, by a cross. So all you have to do is hold a cross up and, or put a cross on, and she's just like, nope, not having it. So again, witch, vampire, Satanist, maybe. We don't know, like, which thing it is. It's all three things, basically, at the same time. So they're fighting Asa, trying to keep her from taking over Katya's body, because, like I said, the young doctor has fallen in love with her, so he's going to try and rescue her. And also, they're trying to kill the sidekick, Javutich, I think is how you pronounce his name. So they're trying to do that. Javutich, also, he gets, like, fucking impaled through the eye. So again, like, some of the gore in this, yes, it's tame by today's standards, but for 1960, people must have just, like, shit a brick when they saw this. It's like, holy crap, like, eye gougings, like, fucking spikes in the face, is like, fucking, there's all kind of, like, gory shit. There's also a great scene, too, like, near the end, where Katya is, that Asa is trying to, like, play a trick, where she's just like, oh, no, that's the witch over there, I'm Katya, totally. But then, like, then she kind of, like, opens her robe up, and her whole chest is, like, nasty looking, like, ribs and stuff. It's, like, it looks so cool. And just, like, I just love the visuals in this movie, just so great. And there's also another really cool trick that they did near the end of the film, which, again, was done very simply. And you could really only do this if you shoot in black and white. But they did they did a scene where Barbara Steele, she's like laying on the slab or whatever, and then her face goes from like really like shitty, like old looking, like and wrinkly to like really young and beautiful again. And they actually did that like in camera. And they did it by putting a bunch of wrinkles and like stuff, like hollowing out her eyes and stuff with a red grease pencil. So then when you do like red or green lights, it kind of like fades from one thing to the other because the red light will be like invisible. If you put like red light over it, it'll make the makeup disappear. So that's a really common trick. And like I said, obviously you can't do that in color, but they could do that in black and white. I guess initially when they were first talking about making this movie, the producers wanted it to be in Technicolor, but Mario Bava, I guess he was already thinking about some of these effect sequences and he was already thinking about the cinematography. Because like I said, this was his first like big official directorial job. Prior to this, he'd been a cinematographer. So he was like, you know, he knew his shit in that department. And so I think that he was already thinking of like certain effect scenes that he wanted to do that would only be able to be done in black and white. Among them, that aging kind of thing. Like I said, you can't do that in color, obviously. You know, now it would be a piece of piss to do it, as the British say. But back then, not so much. But I just really love like the simple effects and like how effective they were. You know, it just goes to show like, you know, you're craft and shit like that. Like it's just really interesting, really fascinating, like what you can do if you know what you're doing, you know. And I don't remember if I mentioned this earlier, but one of the things that I heard about this movie was that the sets were built in black and white, and I don't think that that's necessarily the case, because I think that there were photographs of the set taken and they were in color. But that might have been because of something that Barbara Steele said about, oh, everybody's costumes were black and white. But a lot of people were like, no, they weren't. That was just like some weird shit that she was saying. So maybe that's where the misconception came from. Because I've seen like some other reviews of this where I think they mentioned that all the sets had been built in black and white. And I don't know if that's, and I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that that's the case. I think the sets were actually in color. They were just lit, you know, in a way that would, because obviously you can't light things the same or whatever when you're shooting in black and white. But yeah, so Mario Bava definitely wanted to shoot this in black and white. So as I said, even though this didn't do that great in Italy at first, like when it first came out, it ended up being massively, massively influential, not only on Italian horror, but on horror just in the Western world everywhere, like around the globe, honestly. So between this, Psycho, and Peeping Tom, it was almost kind of like all three of those coming out like right around the same time was really kind of like, that was like a banner year, I guess, because a lot of modern horror, you know, the roots of modern horror sort of came from these movies. And then obviously Mario Bava would go on to do Blood and Black Lace, which was kind of like a very early giallo, or at least the one, there had been one before that, like called The Girl Who Knew Too Much, which was kind of like a Hitchcockian black and white thing. But Blood and Black Lace was the one that really established all the tropes of the giallo going forward, that particularly Dario Argento would pick up on. You know, the super saturated colors, you know, the kind of like dude with the black gloves, the knives, the overly sexualized killings, you know, that type of thing. So that's kind of what that would do. And then Mario Bava would go on also to do A Bay of Blood, or better known as, well, it's not better known, I just like the title Twitch of the Death Nerve better. That's what it was released as initially, but it's better known as Bay of Blood, which actually, that came out in 1971, I want to say, and very, very influential on the American slasher film, particularly Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th franchise, I believe part two, actually directly ripped off a couple scenes from that, including the spear through the two people having sex, which came right from A Bay of Blood. Mario Bava's influence on cinema, horror cinema, just really can't be overstated, I don't think. I mean, because he was just at the forefront of so much stuff that came along later on. And even though you could argue that Black Sunday is kind of like a throwback, because like I said, it's very gothic, it's very, you know, universal monster type of thing, but you could argue that it's kind of like the meeting of the past and the future, because it's like, yes, we have all these gothic elements. I mean, you know, much in the same way that Hammer was doing. We have all these old gothic elements, but we're modernizing it with more nudity and more gore. And so that was just something that was kind of almost like a natural progression. So he was like right at the forefront of that. But yeah, so I feel like if you're a horror fan, you really, really need to see Black Sunday, because it's one of those, just like Psycho, just like Peeping Tom, just like anything that came out around this time period, it's one of those movies that was so influential that you really owe it to yourself to kind of see it, to see the roots of modern horror, really. And even though, as I said, by today's standards, it's not that gory at all, and it's, you know, it's a very gothic movie, and it's not super narratively strong. And even you could argue that maybe some of the acting is a little wooden. The dubbing is not that great, but that kind of happens with a lot of Italian films, so what are you going to do? But visually, it's just gorgeous. It's a beautiful masterpiece. It's just like every single shot, and just the way it's shot is just fantastic. So definitely check out Black Sunday. And if you noticed, because I'm putting this up on the Sunday before Halloween, so you knew that I had to do Black Sunday for this day, because I've been wanting to do it for a long time, and I was just like, well, obviously I have to do it for this day too. But yeah, so this is the first day of my Halloween Eek Week specials, so we're gonna do some more movies this week leading up to the day of Halloween next Sunday, so please look out for all of my videos this week, my extra ones, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye!